Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Get Out of Rap. Today I'm joined by Shara Lee Piddock, who is a senior subject matter expert at DDC Outsourcing and DDC, big friends of mine, and I've had the pleasure of talking to Shara a few times now, so I'm really looking forward to this. Shara, thank you very much for joining.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And I know we've spoken before around your career and about DDC, and we'll get into that, but where did it all start for you? How come you're here today? And you don't have to say that Chrissy forced you into it.
Blasted Chrissy. No, bless her. So, yeah, I'm here today because I've been encouraged to be here today, because apparently my story might be quite interesting to other people in our industry. So, yeah, I guess it all started nearly 10 years ago. So in June, I'll have been at DDC OS for 10 years. And before I came to DDC, I actually was a Sunday counter girl. I used to work on makeup and beauty counters at the weekend, and I was studying. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I left school. So I thought, well, I've got to do something. If I'm doing something, I may as well do something that I actually enjoy doing. So I picked beauty, and I went into holistic and spa therapy after I did my initial beauty course. And then it kind of, after I'd qualified, I thought, well, I've spent all that time training, I need to sort of pursue it. So I'd had an opportunity after I'd finished my training to go and work in a spa. And I only worked there for a couple of months, and I'd left Boots to go there. And I actually ended up on less working hours there. It was at the time where nil-hour contracts were a really big thing. I ended up having less hours there than I had got previously when I was doing the sort of silver service waitressing, Sunday girl sort of hybrid. So at that point, I'd moved out really young, and I literally just needed bills and enough to sort of be able to go and have a pint, play pool, and that was basically it. So I'd obviously started looking at that point for something that was a bit more of a stable income. And then the opportunity to be a sales advisor in a contact center came up at DDC. And I'd never done contact center work before. It'd always been like, this was 19, so very start of my career. And I sort of thought, hey, it's not going to be that much different. I've done it face to face, you know, it'll basically be the same. And I can remember my interview. They'd asked me a question about what motivates me, because this was a sales job. So what motivates me at work? And at that, very different answer now if you ask me. But at that time, I was 19. I had a house to pay for. I wanted to be able to survive, basically. So I'd kind of just said money, which is the best answer if you're sort of applying for a sales job. As I say, very different answer if you ask me now the same question. But at the time, it was just I needed money. I needed as many hours as I could physically grab my hands on, get my hands on, and that's what it gave me. It was a full hour contract, potential for bonus, and that's kind of how I got into contact center. And yeah, then a very long journey, I suppose, from there. So I can start talking through what happened next, or any questions.
You know, that first, because like you, I had a flat to pay for in London, and I was looking through jobs, and I was looking, going, do I think I can do this? Because that wasn't my, I wasn't thinking, oh, will I make a career out of this?
Oh, I was so scared. I was like, really? It can't be that different. But I was terrified. I was like, I thought I'd never get through the interview. I didn't think I'd be able to even answer the questions, because I'd only really had, I'd got the silver service waitressing job through a friend, because they'd already worked there. I felt like very much imposter syndrome. I felt like I flunked the interview for working on the beauty counters and didn't understand how I'd even ended up there for a few years. So I was terrified when I actually got called for an interview. I was like, oh my God, they're going to hate me. They're going to be like, you're not professional enough to work in an office, like go back to the sort of shop floor. So it was a massive culture shock for me walking through the doors of a contact center and having to wear office clothes, which was at the time, it was very sort of pre-COVID, obviously, we've sort of relaxed a little bit with hybrid working, but at the time it was very much, I used to wear my little blazer jacket, and yeah, I was really scared walking into that interview. Obviously not now, I've been here 10 years, but culture shock, massive.
Can you remember those first few, that first experience of coming in? Because did you have expectations or not? Or were you just kind of like, oh, I'm,
I kind of did. Can you remember that? There used to be a show. I can't remember where it was based now, but it was like, I think it used to be called the Contact Centre or the Call Centre. It was a show.
The Welsh guy, Neville.
The Welsh, yes, yeah. That was the perspective that I had walking into a contact centre like that. And I mean, it wasn't all that. There was a bit because it was salesy. So we used to, you know, throw balls around and have radio on in between the dialer and stuff at that point. But yeah, I think the biggest change as well, I was fairly comfortable and settled in sales, but then I moved into customer services. And it wasn't until my career basically shifted as soon as I moved from sales into customer services. And I thought, God, why did they even hire me for sales? Like, I am made, born and bred for customer services. And yeah, that's kind of where the rest of my career then sort of spiraled into what it is now. But yeah, that was the image that I'd had, is people skipping over the, like, the headset wires and yeah, eating snacks at your desk, banter. So yeah, walking out of everybody's glaring at you environment on a shop floor, or having one-on-one, you know, in a spa, it's one-on-one. So if you're a bit too rough on their shoulders, you're the only person to sort of blame going into this massive team where you're all dependent on each other from a morale perspective. And yeah, massive change. Not exactly what I expected, because I had such an informal view of what it would be. But I think it definitely lived up to some expectations in terms of the team vibes. And yeah, yeah. So this, and I'm here 10 years later, so clearly I enjoy it very massively.
This move from sales to customer service, how did that happen?
So in contact centre, so I was selling gas and electric, but at this point, so I knew a little bit about gas and electric, but when I say a little bit, I knew the bare basics to be able to get the sale over the line, like what's a kilowatt hour and how do we charge you the bill, to be able to explain to somebody that we're going to save you money and get my sale. And essentially that was all to get my commission and get my bonus. So I knew and I learned what I needed to learn to be able to earn my bonus, which is what I was there for. But that was it. Then we won a contract, which was actually our first ever energy utilities customer service contact center contract. So myself and another lady were asked to support that onboarding as like the first two customer service agents. That grew rapidly. I was really proud of what that became. To be part of it was huge. It was a great success. Really enjoyed it. And I kind of, because we'd been there since day one, I had to learn it. I worked really closely with the client, learning the industry, compliance regulations, and then kind of, just had to understand the system capabilities, the process capabilities. And because we were the first, every cohort that we then brought in with Grove, we basically embedded them. So we became the SMEs very quickly. And then after that, became team manager. But yeah, it was just all about being on the floor, supporting them during that SME period. So you just naturally learn, because you're not dependent on yourself, are you? If you've got somebody to ask, I always find if I've got somebody to ask, it's a lot easier to ask the question than to put it on yourself. And I always used to say this when we got people out and floor walking, that I don't feel confident enough to floor walk. That's what they'd say. And I'd say, yeah, but that's how your confidence comes, because you have to depend on yourself to give the answer. They're depending on you. And then you're confident, actually, I do know what I'm talking about. So that for me, like, reaffirmed to me, actually, you know what you're talking about. Look how much you've learned in a year. And yeah, I thrived. I used to drive people mad, I'm sure, because I used to be hopping. I used to be so passionate. I'd be hopping around, like, save this woman £20 because I convinced her to change it. I used to love it, thrive. So then, yeah, moved into team management from there. And I ended up managed loads of different types of campaigns in different projects, so multiple different clients and different departments. So I'd started in voice customer service. Then I had a back office team. I've had an email team, a social media team. I've done escalated complaints. And like I say, then after quite a big period of time, I'd moved from one project then into another one, because it was another onboarding of a new energy client, another fairly big win for us. And we wanted to make sure it did well. So yeah, I was considered one of the people adequate enough to support that and get it onboarded, which we did. So yeah, then I went on maternity and then everything changed drastically. So yeah, that's kind of where it all led from. Like I say, went into customer services, and yeah, the rest is history, I suppose.
We'll get to that kind of post maternity, but I love your story and your passion, because it's it's everything that contact centers should be about. These are the sort of stories we should be telling people, because you've gone through it. All of the different things that you've done, even just one of them individually, is brilliant. But the fact that you kind of were one of two people to go and set something up, to make that transition from sales to customer service. Not only that, what I love is, in our industry, there's people like you that just throw themselves into it. So really, you were team, before you were given the title team manager, your team manager.
Oh, I applied for it and I didn't get it. And I remember asking for my feedback of the interview. And I thought to myself, they're going to regret this. And I can remember,
really?
Yeah, I can remember feeling like they're going to regret this. I am absolutely. And I think the feedback that I got given was, you do know a lot. And they weren't wrong by any means. There's a very big difference between being an expert and knowing all of the processes and then going and managing a team. And at the time, I was young and naive. And I was like, I'm the best of the best. Like in my head, I was like, I can't know anymore. Probably a bit arrogant, actually. But in my head, yeah, I was really confident. I was like, this campaign is literally, I've been here since day one. I know the ins and outs of it. As I said, probably a bit too arrogant of myself at that point. And I've been knocked down a peg or two since then. But yeah, I didn't know how to manage people. I liked helping people. I liked fixing processes and I liked making things work better and saving us time and making my team happier because it worked smoother, which is ironic now because that's where that's where I'm at in the business now. But at the time, I didn't realize that's what I enjoyed so much about it. I just thought to progress, I needed to be a team manager and that's my next step. And I didn't really honestly think about anywhere else in the business. I didn't think, could I work HR? Could I support? I literally just thought my next step's team manager and that's where I want to be. And then, yeah, I got my feedback and I was like, okay, so what do I need to do to be a team manager? And they were like, a lot more than you're doing now. You need to be understanding how to coach people properly. And so I went and found out how to do it and then applied again and got it. So,
yes.
And then, yeah, the rest came.
That's amazing because that right there is the reaction of either you win or you learn. And for you to take that.
Oh, I was still hungry for money at that point. I was still fairly young and I was still very much like, I want a life. And yeah, I just want to be better, I think, at that point. Yeah.
I love it. It's brilliant because you used that not getting it as fuel, right?
It made me very, yeah, I was a bit too fiery, I think, at that point. I was like, let's go get it then. I'll show you. And then I went and did it and I was over the moon. I can remember getting my acceptance letter and I can remember being so nervous because you see, it was at the time where everybody would be spoken to face in an office. You'd see people going off into a meeting room and you could see people walking around the office and you'd be like this, watching them go into the meeting. I'm like, oh God, I wasn't first. Maybe I've not got it. And then it's, oh, I've definitely not got it. Kind of remember sitting in the seat and then going, and I think they'd asked me how I felt it went. And I was like, well, I felt like I did a really good job. And I was like, I couldn't have done any more. And that's all I could have asked. If I felt like I could have done more, then I'd have been disappointed. But I remember sitting there and thinking, you did everything you physically could do. If there's more development, there's more development. But as of what you've got to give right now, you've done all of it. You've done it all. You've given them everything you can. And then they said, congratulations. And I was like, what? And then, yeah, that was that. I was like, knew I could do it. Watch me go.
That's brilliant. That is amazing. How many people were there in your team?
So I think I started and I think it probably was about 15 FTE that I had to begin with. But then there were times where I'd had like a hybrid. So I'd have like 6 back office staff. And then, so I think I had probably about 15 FTE voice and then 6 back office staff. And then there were other times where I had like 6 FTE, which were kind of where they didn't fit into equal splits of FTE. There was a smaller remaining because of the headcount on the campaign. And then I had, say, 12 FTE on a complaints team. So there were times where I kind of managed 2 different work streams at the same time. So I'd be coaching 1 minute on the AHT and then the next minute I'd be looking at an escalated complaint and how we'd structured it to CAB or Ombudsman or whatever. So yeah.
Well, really? Did you have three? You kind of had three. So you had back office.
Well, it varied because I started off with just voice, then I moved into email, then I had email, and then I had social media. And at that point, I think I probably had, oh God, it was a while ago, so I could be completely lying here, but let's say probably about 20 plus at that point, because I had the social media as well. And then from there, I think I ended up handing that over to somebody else, coaching somebody else up on the element, the social media and the email element. And then I think I ended up going back to support on voice because we had another project come in, part of the same campaign, but it was a new element. It was, if I remember rightly, it was debt collect. So we kind of took a new arm on, went on a bit of a strategy drive for debt. And then I supported literally the communications, the whole process. We supported that project in, and then ended up back in that customer service sort of remit because of that. And then after that, it was complaints and then a bit of voice at the same time. So yeah, shifted around a little bit. I think probably maximum team size, I don't think I've had any more than, I want to say 20-ish. And I think that would have only been for a short period of time because we don't usually stretch that headcount unless it's for a short period of time until we can recruit back in. That would have been if people had sort of moved on to other projects and we needed to get people somewhere fast.
So, how did you prioritize where you spent your time? Because you had so much to do there.
So a lot of stress. I find things better written down. So I just use my calendar, and I can remember I supported one of the LAs or a couple of the LAs once in how they prioritize their day. And I found I'd block time out in my calendar where I could block time out, but I would keep things connected. So if I had a coaching tracker, I could filter it out to see exactly what I wanted to do, but it's all in one place. Because my thing is, like, I think we say death by spreadsheet, and I love a spreadsheet, My thing is, if it's not easy to find or accessible to me, it gets very confusing very fast, and then I just lose my trail and I end up in chaos. So for me, it was just, I ended up pulling a lot of things again. It's not a shock that I ended up where I am at, but I ended up just pulling things together myself in terms of tracks and things like that in a way that I made it easier for me to manage. So I do, like, coaching forms at the time were, we were still in the office. So coaching forms at the time were a piece of paper, usually scanned in, you know, shredded, uploaded. And that's basically what we did. So I'd sort of made an electric version and was like, right, all of my data was going to be in one place. I can filter it out to see how many sessions I've delivered on this, this and this. Obviously I just used to use my calendar and then make sure that everything was just in one place, really.
What was your favorite part of the role? What was the thing you loved to do?
I love my people. At that point, yeah, I really loved my people. And we used to do this thing on, I forget what I used to call it now, but I used to ask the guys to come with like a pun of the week. And on a Friday, and I remember we used to have this poster on the board behind us, and I can't remember what it said now, but it was something about a team. I was a really cheesy team manager. I was. I very much cared about my people. So you know how you do your personality trait test? I was like all green or all yellow, which is like fun, caring about my people, like want to know your detail. And yeah, I was very much invested in my people. It didn't really matter what part of the business I worked in, what department. That's why I was, I wouldn't say I'm free flowing, but I was flexible and I didn't really mind if we needed me moved into support somewhere else. I just would, because it needed happening. So long as my people were okay, that's really all I was bothered about. Yeah. I really enjoyed team management at that time. It was right for me, I think, at that time.
I absolutely love that. How long did you do that for then?
Oh, goodness. Where are we at? Probably, including when I came back from maternity, probably about 4 years. I'd worked here probably about 4.5 years, I think, when roughly, might be wrong. Don't check my CV, will you? But yeah, roughly, probably about 4.5 years, including the time after my maternity, before I moved out into a different department. But that's including the time as an agent as well. So I probably had only been a manager around 3 years, but I'd already sort of done all of that in that sort of 3 years.
I'd even done quality.
I managed quality at one point, actually, only in the interim. But yeah, I really enjoyed managing quality as well. That was a very different kettle of fish.
It's really impressive. because you're so well-rounded, having worked in and been exposed or managed pretty much every activity there is, I think it's brilliant. And you're so young. So you did all of this, and then you went for maternity.
Mm-hmm.
How was that whole experience like coming back? Your whole life has changed, I guess.
Absolute shift. I was terrified to come back, absolutely terrified to come back. And it's not for lack of sort of communication I just my life flipped upside down. I was 20, I think I turned 22 in the May and had my little boy in the June. So I was only 22. So I was quite a young, I was quite a young mum. I was a bit clueless as well. I wasn't very well prepared, but I'm a bloody good mum, I tell you that. I figured it out. And I got really quite severe postnatal depression. And I had quite terrible OCD tendencies. My partner used to come home while I was on maternity. Little boy had been napping. And I'd have split the sofa in half because I just needed it to be different because I was just that aggravated. But then I wouldn't go outside. So I was in a bit of a bad way during that maternity. So coming back, having to, one, go outside my front door when I wasn't... When you're on maternity, that's in your sort of power. Mm-hmm. That if you're not 100% or you're too scared to go out of that door, which is where I was at right then, I wouldn't have gone, which wasn't healthy. But I was just in a bit of a bad way coming back to work. If I was on shift, I was on shift. So it was quite a challenge. Then coming back into what I thought I knew, I was assigned into one of the newer contracts that we'd had, which I'd not really had any exposure to. We'd got a new building and there was just so much that had changed in 9 months, which is great for the business. Growth and change, it's good. But when you're in a state of everything's got to be perfect and everything's got to be in my control, which is where I was at. I had, like I said, really bad OCD tendencies. My anxiety was through the roof. I was not well at all. It was a real big struggle. So I came back and came in to do a job share because I came in part-time. Eventually ended up moving back to full-time. The business were great. They really, really did support me. And I did end up going back full-time and becoming a team manager, but I was better. Don't get me wrong. I was getting better. But I still wasn't 100%. And I just thought, maybe I just don't have this in me anymore. Maybe all I need to do is look after my son. And maybe I haven't got enough emotion and energy to share myself. Maybe I just need to get home at the end of my shift and just be able to function. And I felt like I was drained at the end of my shift. I was trying to give so much to my people while sort of trying to level my anxiety and not tip myself over the edge with a panic attack every sort of couple of hours. Yeah, I just thought, this is going to finish me off. I can't continue doing what I'm doing. And then that's when I'd sort of said, I don't think I'm made for contact centre anymore. My priorities have shifted. My life has changed. I, as a person, have changed. My anxiety was worse than it had ever been in my entire life at that point. And yeah, point, I had an opportunity to become a change analyst it was only for 6 months, but between me starting that sort of interim role, a service delivery executive role came up, which was when then I moved into that professional service environment and completely out of contact, well, not completely out because we still collaborate really closely, but out of the contact centre environment as such. So yeah, that's when then I made the shift to where I'm at now with the team that I've got. So moved into professional services. And then the service delivery exec role is basically supporting, at the time it was service delivery manager, but now it's client services. And that's the role that we've had a bit of a restructure since. But at the time it was supporting with data and insights for continuous improvement. I job shared, actually. I was really fortunate and my boss was wicked. She was amazing. Barney Beale, just give you a shout out. Absolutely amazing and such a good fit for me. Really, really helped because I was still shaky at that point. Build sort of my confidence back up to where it was before, because my confidence was non-existent. I was scared to present anything. I'd be scared to have a meeting with people. And this was, COVID had just hit. So I'd gone into that service delivery exec role literally as COVID had hit. So me and Shivani had worked with each other for a year before we'd even met face-to-face properly. which is crazy when we think about it now. Mm. But yeah, she really helped to sort of build my confidence back up and my belief in myself, in that you know your stuff. You just need to believe you know your stuff and not doubt yourself and show people what you can do again. And she worked part-time, so I was really fortunate because I was full-time, that on the days that Shivani didn't work, I kind of stepped into that client service manager role, and I was learning from her on then the other 3 days, and I'd be supporting with like risk login, risk management, change management. And it was kind of I didn't have to have the responsibility of client service manager, but I had a really good opportunity to sort of shadow, because it was a job share as such, learn on the job, but still have the safety blanket around me that says, but you're not the client service manager and you're still learning, which was amazing for me, exactly what I needed. And within a year, people tell me all the time, like the shift that you, compared to where you were and the way that I presented myself 4 years ago, even massive, massive change. And then, yeah, so I was a service delivery exec for a little while. And then after that, I basically took on the team that I've got now. I've supported during that time as well as an actual client service manager and onboarding of projects and things like that, project management, program management, so on. But yeah, and then I sort of, now I head up my team, and process improvement team. I've got a fantastic bunch of people. I've got three individuals that report directly into me. One is junior to me. She's got a lot of utilities industry background. And then I have two business performance and process analysts as well, which again, utilities background, retail experience. And I've worked in retail since leaving the contact center. I've worked in retail, I've worked in logistics, I've got utilities experience. So yeah, the beauty of outsourcing, I've gained so much knowledge in the last 5 years, and I've been really fortunate to be able to have that exposure to be able to go and get it. But yeah, I absolutely love my team now. They're a fantastic bunch of people and they all just care so much. And yeah, but I suppose I'm back to full strength, hopefully.
I honestly have so much admiration and respect for you and that. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's something that previous guests have come on and talked about. You know, that kind of, you were in flow up to that point, but you, like you said, you're so young. You're in flow and then your world changes for the better. You've got a child, but
it's, best things that ever happened, but massive culture shock. Like,
and it's totally disorientating, isn't it? Then, given the pace of contact centers, when you come back, all of a sudden, it doesn't take much.
It felt like
I'd
been away 10 years. Yeah. It was crazy. I was like, oh my God, do I even belong here anymore? And I'd already felt sort of anyway, but.
And there's a theme running through this about that you know you are a fighter, you know, you kept going and you've survived your worst days, you know, that kind of, and still now taking on different roles, different industries, different disciplines and skills, and recognizing that I think people think your career kind of goes in a straight line and everything's fine and you just keep progressing. It isn't. It's very squiggly and you get kind of knockbacks that aren't work related.
Oh yeah, you know? Even now, you know, there will be times now where I'm working on my own self-belief now. That is one of the areas, because everyone says like, I don't like, you present and you'd never guess that you're nervous. And I'm like, you should see me after. And then give me 10 minutes, I'm back to full strength again when I've sort of talked myself down. I think for a big period of time with me, I used to have to talk myself up and then talk myself down. So you're going to smash it. You're going to be fine. Go and do it. You know you're capable. I'd go, I'd do it. And then I'd be like, oh my God, oh my God. And then I'd have to talk myself down. And I'm not as bad now, but yeah, by any stretch, it's 100%. It's like a wave. And it always has been for me. And I think it doesn't end... It didn't end for me when I started feeling better and I would consider postnatal depression, not resolved, but better. For me now, I'm still a parent. My priority still has to be my child. I've still got to make sure that I'm giving him what he needs in terms of time and making sure that I reserve my energy. So that balance, it doesn't just stop because postnatal depression got easier. Because my dependency, my child's dependency on me it's there and it will be for the rest of my life now. So it's not just, okay, you feel better mentally now. now it's how do you balance work life with being a parent, still be able to give as much as you want to give at work, but reserve enough that your child's getting everything that they need. And I have terrible mum guilt. And that's probably what I will probably now until he's 18 and then some, I'll continue to try and balance, because I sit back and I think, oh, I could have, you know, when they're asleep and you think, oh, I could have done that better today and tomorrow's going to be a better day. And I put a lot of pressure on myself from that respect as well. So yeah, I think that wave will it doesn't ever end. You just wake up in the morning and I'm like, right, now what?
I bet he's very, when he's older, or even now, I bet he's very proud of his mum. So
that's all I want. Yeah, literally. That's what I said earlier when I said, if you ask me the question now, like what motivates you? I just want my son to get old, look back and say, gosh, she smashed it, and be proud of what I did. And that's literally it. I couldn't ask for anything more. But that mum guilt gets you. It really does get you.
I think just with any of the things that you've mentioned, you know, we spoke before. I don't mind admitting I've talked about it way back when I suffered with depression, and you know, even after it had finished, now I'm just feel like I'm better informed and better prepared to be aware of the signs that might take me into that space again, you know. But it's a companion then. It's something that you'll always have, that you'll always have to just be mindful of, and your kind of strategies and coping mechanisms, you just have, you're constantly working on them, aren't you?
Yeah, 100%. Like I said, even now, people will say to me, like, what do you mean that you've got no confidence? Because I can be. In fact, I've been told I'm intimidating, so I can't balance the books really. But yeah, even now, from a self-belief and a confidence perspective, I might sound like the most confident person you've met. And I might still sound arrogant to people. I don't know. I'm absolutely not. I shut my laptop at the end of the day and I think, God, and 1,001 things of what I should or could have done differently lists. But it is just how, like you said, you recognize that. And it's not always easy. And I still get caught up in it now. But it's recognizing that and then trying to, like I said, talk myself down in rationalizing my thought process, because I do get in a bit of tears and a panic. And like you said, it's always there. It's just recognizing it. And when you learn strategies, trying to continue implementing and using those strategies, because they do work, but sometimes it just gets you too fast, doesn't it? And I still get in a tears, like I said now. So it's just, we're all doing the best that we can do at the end of the day, aren't we? So.
You're a perfect example, I think, of the combination of when you have a really talented, hardworking person that can do anything. That is, you're perfect for our industry.
Never been called perfect before.
But you're perfect for our industry, because you can just, you've evidenced in a short space of time all of these different things you've done. But when you combine that with a company that recognizes that and genuinely cares, these are the sort of things that people don't realize about our industry. You know, DDC, it sounds like, have been, whether it's individuals or some of the processes that they have been for you in the good times and the bad times, and but they wouldn't be doing that if you were an absolute nightmare.
I don't know. I'll let you ask them that question. But no, 100%. And it wasn't this year's, but last year we did, for International Women's Day, we did a bit of a round table, and you'll have probably seen the clips last year. In there, we spoke about, you know, the imposter syndrome and how we can support each other and the rest of it. I said it in that meeting, I feel I owe a lot to a lot of individual people, but essentially their processes are there as well for a reason. But yeah, I've had so many great individuals in this business, because this essentially has been my adult career, like a proper job. She wore a suit jacket, you know. I thought I was a grown up at 19. God, I didn't have a clue. Looking back now, I didn't have a clue, but no, I am grateful. It's been a journey. I've learned a lot, but honestly, if you looked at 16-year-old me that was like, well, I may as well just, you know, learn how to massage somebody, at least I'll enjoy it. And now I'm like looking at, you know, data constantly and understanding AI and how we can automate things. And yeah, it's a completely different world, but I thoroughly enjoy it. And I never would have thought, you know, 16-year-old, you're actually data-driven. data driven. I was all about, and I was like performing arts and English lit. They were my things. I didn't do particularly well in maths at GCSE. I think I just scraped a C, and that might have even been on a resit. But yeah, the things I were good at, I didn't really have a passion in, and that was like science. So I got really good GCSEs in science. I was actually in the local newspaper because I got really great GCSEs, but I wasn't expecting it because, yeah, I just, when you're 16, I was in a very different headspace in terms of where I'm at now. But no way would I have thought, I'm going to work in a contact centre, then you're going to manage a team, and then what you're going to do is you're going to automate processes, save people time, save people money, and you're going to love it. Like, no chance.
And is that the sort of thing that you're doing now, that kind of, you mentioned efficiencies, processes, data and AI, do all of those things come to bear in the role that you and the team are doing now then?
Yeah, largely. So we sit within professional services. So we work really closely. We've got developers within our department, not within my team, but within our professional service department. And we work, we are, obviously DDC is global. So we work really closely with our Serbian and our Bosnian team. So we've got developers in our department. We've got we categorize slightly different. So we've got like IT development, MI development. So we've got the ability to build apps. We build reporting on Power BI. We build software, etc. I say we. I don't physically build most of that myself, but we support with speaking to stakeholders, gathering requirements, understanding the challenges, and then we analyze those challenges and propose the best solution for it, and then support with the handover of those requirements into the relevant department. My team sometimes do sort of low code or no code solutions. So we will create things ourselves, but it's low code, no code, anything further that then we would hand off as full requirements drafted into the relevant department. And then the other things that we do, we go in, we analyze processes. Like I said, we can provide solutions within those processes, or it may be that we just say waste, remove that, replace it with this. We try and automate as much as we can. And then basically whatever's left over that we can't automate, in theory, if it's people orientated, we want our people to be happy. So it's making that remaining element of the process smoother and as pain-free as possible, saving everybody time, money, and essentially making our teams happier. But we are client-facing as well. So we work externally just as much as my team work internally, and we review both sides of the fence in terms of processes. So yeah, largely my team go in, we can just have a spreadsheet of data and somebody says, I don't know what the problem is, can you tell us? And we'll just, you know, analyze the data, throw out some insights and let them make the decisions themselves. But it just depends what people need from us. So our process basically says, if you've got a request, you know what you need, come and ask for our time and we'll go away and we'll do what you need. If you've got a problem and you're not sure what you actually need and you need to come and get help from us to identify what the actual root cause is and identify your problem statement to be able to put the right solution in, we can do that as well. So yeah, if they've got an issue with anything existing, we work that. If they've got any problems and they're not sure what they need to do to be able to resolve them, that could be, I've got a really high HT and I don't know why. Or it could be, I've got this really convoluted process. It's got 16 different sort of handoff points. It's chaos. It's not working very smoothly. It's wasting people's time. What do we do? And then we'll go in and we'll see what we can do to help them. But yeah, essentially, in a nutshell, try and stop repetitive manual movement and try and automate if we can and make everybody happier from a time saving, from a satisfaction of doing the process and to clean it, make it nice and clean.
That's now, before I did this, I don't even know what this is. I couldn't even say. But before I did the podcast and things like that, I did get to a position where I was running contact centers, doing a global director role. So I've managed thousands and thousands of people. I genuinely have to say, if I could have chosen someone to be in a team that makes improvements, and you told me that that person had been an agent, been a team manager, been a SME, set up campaigns, worked in client services, done training, coaching, done all of the different things you've done, I would have bitten your hand off and say, you have genuinely done so much, and you've done it with all of the different things that you've mentioned that have been challenging. you are a perfect example of what's possible in our industry. If you, for every time that you doubt yourself, you should genuinely say you are awesome. And that's not just a throwaway comment. It's based on all of the different things that you've done, and that you've been, and that you're open to talk about. It will massively help other people as well. So I feel very, very lucky to have had this chat with you.
You'll make me cry. I will actually blow up. No, thank you. It's very much appreciated. Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm very fortunate to have my team. Like I say, I'm very proud of them. They are just as agile as I am. They want to do a good job. And yeah, I've come a long way. I think sometimes I do forget, and somebody says to me, what have you done? And I'm like, well, I used to be a team manager. And then you forget that you did quality in that as well. And I think in a nutshell, it's there were challenges. The business needed support. I never said, well, I did say no occasionally, but if I was needed and I could help, then I would try and help to the best that I could. I'm not saying that I am like Joan of Arc and I'm going to go and fix everybody's problems. But if somebody comes to you and asks for you to support because they think you're the right person for it, even if I didn't think it, I was like, well, they think I do. So maybe I am the right person. And I used to explicitly say, I'll do the best that I can do. I'll try my absolute best. And I always do. I give everything that I can give. Might not be perfect, but that's an opportunity to learn, isn't it? That's how I've gained as much. It being around really great people, taking the opportunity to learn from them and asking questions when I don't know what I'm doing. I never go in and pretend I'm an expert. And my team will tell you, the other people that I work with in our business will tell you, if I don't know the answer to something, then there's no shame in that. I'll give you the best answer that I can give you. But if there's a better person out there for it, I'll 100% point you in the right direction and might ask you to let me know what the outcome was so that I know for next time. But yeah, I've been very blessed, and it will be as cheesy as it wants to sound. I've been very blessed. I've been surrounded by a lot of really great people. I've had the opportunity to learn a lot from a lot of different people. I've had a lot of opportunity from the business. And equally, we've had a lot of, from an outsourcing perspective, we've had a lot of scope in terms of the types of clients that we get. So I've been blessed to be able to see utility industry and how that functions. Now, equally, I've had a few years, well, more than a few, half a decade worth of sort of retail and logistics. So yeah, I've been very fortunate. But equally, had I not have taken on those challenges or opportunities that I got given, I wouldn't be where I am today. So
exactly.
That's all I'd take from my last 30 minutes of this conversation, really. If you get given an opportunity, what's the worst that could happen? You can learn from it. You know, you're not meant to succeed at everything, or you'll never get better, are you? So just have to keep believing in yourself and keep trying, I suppose, which, as I said earlier, I'm still working on that bit myself. So it's easier said than done, but yeah, I wouldn't be here today if I didn't keep getting given the opportunities and keep taking them when I could. So thank you very much for your nice, kind comments.
Oh, well, it's thoroughly warranted. I've absolutely loved chatting to you and hearing about this. I hope we get to chat again. And you can add podcast guests now to your list of things that you've achieved. But Sharalee, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.